I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.
I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.
Class is in session. Good evening, class, and welcome to Binary Gamer. I'm your host, Tony Spears, and this is the show where passionate people talk passionately about the thing that we are passionate about, and that thing is video games. So let's get the business out of the way. Binary Gamer is a podcast that you can find in all the places you listen to your podcast, whether it be iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Podcast. If you can listen to a podcast on it, you can find Binary Gamer. You can also find us over on YouTube. Go to YouTube, search Binary Gamers, and you can check out the awesome stuff we do over there. And of course, you can find me, Tony Spears, over on Twitter at iFlipTheSwitch. And follow me over there and we can talk games, talk the chat, maybe just see how each other are doing. Sometimes it's nice just to, check in on people, be like, hey man, how's life? Because sometimes life is hard and there's no difficulty slider. That's a lame analogy, but you know what I mean. So let's start out the show, as we always do, with the week that was. So this last week has just been me playing a lot more Dragon Ball FighterZ. Did a little bit of online, got handled, greatly handled. It was bad. I had a game where I literally, match start, dude rolled me. When my next character came in, he rolled that character about three quarters down on his health, and then I got in a couple moves, then proceeded to be 100% rolled. And then my third character came in, and at that point I was like, well, do I really have a fighting chance right now? Kind of find out, did not. And then just proceeded to finalize the rolling. It was bad. It was pretty bad. But all in all, I feel like I'm getting better. I'm trying to figure out different strategies with different characters. Like, I have a good first two for my team. I can't figure out a third that I like, though, and I don't want to just go with the meta. I don't want to just instantly pick Bardock and be like, all right, well, I'm just going to do my ultimate over and over again until, this guy rage quits, because that's not what I'm here for. I'm trying to get good with some characters. I keep trying to make Nappa happen, and I don't think Nappa is going to happen, and that makes me sad. But anyway, so aside from that, just playing some other small stuff off and on. Kind of been playing a little bit of OG StarCraft, mostly for preparation into this particular episode, and just piddling around. Still don't have my full setup together, but I will be moving into a place very soon, and that is pretty awesome. So hopefully this time next week I will be talking about my gorgeous new house and the lightning fast internet that I have there, and how much all that is going to cost me. So I will be able to smile through the tears as I talk about all my new things that cost me all my money. It's going to be great. But besides that, what else has been going on in the Pacific Northwest? Well, I'll tell you what. We have officially gotten into, man, I had to go into not the dark web, because that's where the bad stuff is, but I had to dig pretty deep and find some stuff and watch a lot of video, a whole lot of freaking video for this particular topic, which is StarCraft. So, like I said, this is the second part in the, competitive gaming and rise of esports series that we're going to do. And I figured one of the best places to start would be StarCraft, because as far as my recollection is concerned, StarCraft is really where a lot of competitive gaming kind of starts. I'm not going to say that it's like the origin of, there's been competitive gaming everywhere for a long time. I mean, if you think about it, you know, arcades were the original, you know, temples of esports when you're really looking at it, you know what I mean? Like, whether you're going for a high score in a game or you're just there to beat your buddies in a game of Mortal Kombat, maybe you're trying to see how good you can get at, you know, freaking Lethal Enforcer, I don't know. Arcades were kind of the impetus, like the launching point for a lot of competitive gaming. And when we start to look at the larger phenomenon of competitive gaming and esports in general, it all does kind of lead back to StarCraft. And there's a good reason for that. And part of that reason is pretty much the entire country of Korea, but we'll get into that. So let's start it off. StarCraft, as we know, is an amazing game that came about through the crazy the craziness that is Blizzard, and essentially rewrote a lot of the rules for what you're looking for in a RTS. So the game's first release was in 1998, and that's still pretty early on in the life cycle of computer games, at least like mainstream computer games. Console gaming at this point had kind of become the mainstay, and computer gaming was sort of relegated to like your really rough like RTSs, things like your Command and Conquers. I mean, you do have things like Age of Empires, which, if we're being completely honest, is what I think was holding up RTSs for a really long time until something like StarCraft comes along. And then StarCraft essentially was just like, hey man, this RTS thing is really cool, but hold my beer. I'm going to go and just completely jack this stuff up soon. So Blizzard comes out with StarCraft, and StarCraft does it with RTSs, something that Command & Conquer couldn't do, and something that, while it's not fair to say that StarCraft is deeper than a game like Age of Empires. Age of Empires is like just shy of Civ when you're looking at computer games, and something like Command & Conquer is almost too simplistic. There's very little differences, even when you start getting into, like, you know, Red Alert, and even Red Alert 2, you start getting into those games and the differences in the units and stuff like that, the differences in gameplay aren't exactly that deep, so there's not really what you would call a meta in the game. So StarCraft completely upends all this by essentially establishing the meta for RTS games, where you have three very distinct, very different races, playable classes, or playable factions that are very, very different. So we start off with the Terran, the Protoss, and the Zerg. So we're all familiar with the Zerg, at least to some extent. I'd like to think that if you're listening to this podcast, that you've heard of the Zerg or heard of a Zerg rush. Well, congratulations, you're at the spot, because the Zerg rush is pretty much a phrase, a tactic, a strat, if you will, coined by, you know, because of this game. And it's kind of crazy to think that so much of what competitive gaming is kind of all funnels back to StarCraft. Not necessarily gameplay wise, but when you're looking at like the general thinking of competitive gaming, of esports itself, you kind of come back to StarCraft for a lot of it. So StarCraft comes out in 98 and does amazing things as far as global sales. It gets incredibly popular, and it's nuts to me to think of like all the different platforms it came out to. Came out on Mac, came out on, obviously, on PC, and it even came out on the Nintendo 64, which I'd completely forgotten about until I was doing research for this, and I was like, oh my god, I totally played StarCraft on the 64. And oddly enough, it wasn't that bad. It had limitations, but it's not that bad of a port. For some reason, there was a lot of RTS games that they were trying to bring over to consoles, and it just was not working, man. They just could not, for the life of them, seem to get it to do what they wanted it to do. But now, when I'm talking about the different classes and stuff like that, Terran, Protoss, and the Zerg, we're talking three very different styles of play. The Terran are very much about like getting units out there that you want to keep alive for a long time, and you want to utilize different researches and stuff like that to make those units more powerful, right? You want to try and build up the siege tanks, get yourself a freaking a warship, or man, what are they called? I can't remember, like the capital ships. I cannot remember what they're called right now. Get one, you know, get those out there and just start blasting fools. You just want to like roll over them with infantry, right? And the Terran also have the ability to like essentially pick up and move their bases, which is really handy because it allows you to establish multiple fronts at different resource centers and stuff like that. So you can get different, you can get minerals and you can get Vespin gas at different rates and stuff like that. It's all pretty well easy. Then the Protoss are more about like, not really like hit and run tactics, but they have a lot more of like what you consider stealth characters. Their units are like pound for pound more powerful, but they cost a lot more resources. So you have to work a little bit faster, a little bit harder in order to get your unit numbers up and everything like that. And then of course the Zerg have the cheapest units, and because of that, a Zerg rush is a thing you can actually do where you just make a whole bunch of Zerglings early on in the game when your opponent probably doesn't have much in the way of defense, if any, and you just send like, you know, 4, 5, or 6 Zerglings at their base and just chip it apart because they don't have the resources to do anything else. And it's a very cheap tactic, and it's probably one of the most infuriating ones. Like, it's yes, I've lost many a time to a Zerg rush. And also the tower rushes, which is something else that was born from it that happened in Warcraft 3 that I don't want to talk about because, God, those memories. But anyway, the Zerg have the has some of the cheapest units, but they also like have like in like late game the most powerful units, and also are easy to expand because they have something called the creep, which in Warcraft 3 was replicated by the undead with the blight that would spread, and like you could only build stuff on the creep, but you could make tunnels in between different patches of creep so they could move quickly and things like that. So again, three very different, very distinct races and very distinct playstyles. So this appeals to a lot of people, and that's really cool. So now let's hop over the pond and go to Korea, where they have something pretty much the impetus of what starts a lot of this competitive gaming. And it's, they're just simply called PC bangs or PC rooms, internet cafes, like whatever you want to call them. But in Korea, this is a huge industry. Essentially, it's a building. Sometimes it's just a small room, like one floor of a building that is just set up with a whole bunch of computers that are linked up together. I mean, anymore these days, they're connected with internet and stuff like that. But essentially, it's a bunch of computers, and people go in there and they pay to play games. And these started to catch on in some places in the States, but not as much, because once people had internet in their houses, a lot of people preferred more to take their computers over to their friend's house if that's what they were going to do, if they're going to LAN. I did it myself a lot, especially back in high school. We would cart over multiple PCs to my friend Nick's house, hook them all up, and freaking play CSGO, you know, Counter-Strike, and freaking Day of Defeat, and freaking Microsoft Flight Simulator. Man, I'll tell you what, you haven't lived until you've done New York to LA in real time. Wow. Oh, those were dark days. And not even with a flight stick. We didn't all have flight stick. Nick was the only one with a flight stick. I'm sitting here flying a freaking 747 with a mouse and keyboard, which once you start getting to like the Kansas area in October is not easy. But I digress. Oh man, we were flying so low too. Like technically the FAA would probably have shot us down at that point. That's not the point. In Korea, these internet cafes, like they are pretty much a way of life. And so when StarCraft came out, it was really easy for people to do 4-on-4s or 3-on-3s or whatever in these PC rooms, and they would, you know, play tournaments and stuff like that. And so this caught on in a big, bad way, and it gives rise to the competitive StarCraft scene in Korea, which, you know, in later years would spill over to other parts of the world, especially once you have, you know, faster, more capable internet in a lot of different places. But you really look at Korea as the like the nest, the home, if you will, of what competitive StarCraft was. And it got huge, it got real big real fast. And so then you have, you know, different things happen to the scene. You have a lot of rising stars, if you will, and then pretty soon the whole game becomes CPM or clicks per minute. And it's funny because to me, in my head, it kind of takes some of the grandeur, if you will, out of the RTS genre, because I always think of it in like terms of tactics and stuff like that, especially when I'm playing like, you know, Red Alert, or especially like Rise of Nations or Age of Empires. You know, you think of it as like, okay, I'm going to get all these guys, I'm going to move them over here, and then I'm going to get, you know, these people to build up this stuff, so when I get my trebuchets over on this side, I can bombard them from a distance and stuff like that. You don't do that in competitive StarCraft. In competitive StarCraft, you're trying to do the most actions per minute, because the more actions you do, the more progress you're making toward building up units and getting them where you want them to be, which is in the home base of your opponent, smashing their face in. And like I said, that's not really for me. I never really got into like competitive RTS like that. But at the same time, I can see where the skill is, because you're micromanaging so many different like little things. And it's funny because when you look at competitive gaming, a lot of it comes down to, are you better at micromanaging or macromanaging? Macromanaging in a game is something like CSGO or like Rainbow Six Siege, where you're just worried about yourself. The team dynamic is going on, you're communicating with your team, but so far in your own ability, you're really just kind of worried about you and how you're going to play your part. When you're looking at micromanaging in a game, you're looking at things like StarCraft, you're looking at Dota, you're looking at, even to a certain extent, things like Hearthstone or Magic, and you're looking at controlling multiple facets, like singularly, with your, just with one in your brain, taking part in multiple things going on. And so the people that can play high level competitive StarCraft, especially these days in like StarCraft 2, things like that, it's amazing to see, because they're managing so much. And while they're not really like memorizing everything that's going on every second, they still have the, I guess, the spatial awareness, the battle sense, if you will, to quote a Star Wars term, to make sure they're checking up on all of the places they need to be focusing on at any given time, and doing at least not necessarily the right action in the place, but enough actions in the place to kind of get things going in the way they want it to go. And that's really the best way to define what makes a good StarCraft player, is can this person get enough actions done in a small enough window of time to forward their progress toward the inevitable goal of building up enough units and rushing down the enemy's base. If you're better than that than your opponent, you're going to win. If you're not, most likely you're going to try and turtle up, which is the most classic fuck up in that game, and you're going to die. So that's pretty much the story of my entire competitive StarCraft career. Try to turtle up, it doesn't work, son. Like, you can have the waves freaking crash against the rocks, but eventually those rocks will give in, and that rock is usually a siege tank. But I digress. So why isn't StarCraft the like number one thing still being played today, right? Well, it's still pretty big. So back in 2010, someone done goofed. And by done goofed, I mean, well, there's no really good analogy to not make me sound like an insensitive jerk, so I'll just get into it. But at one point in the lifespan of its start and 2010, competitive StarCraft was being played for a lot of money, and you had these teams going in and they were playing, and you know, everyone is trying to stay competitive, try and make it really interesting. But then you got people starting to get the green in their eyes, if you will, and well, not to mince words, but people started cheating. Now, not in the whole like, oh man, I've, you know, like turn the turbo button on my freaking mouse, nothing like that. People were essentially fixing matches. So essentially the way it would work is they would go into, you know, a 2-on-2, sometimes a 1-on-1, and there would be talks behind the scenes of how things were going to pan out. And not just in the idea of like the person starts the game and then just, you know, doesn't do anything and they throw the game, but it was essentially them agreeing to the person playing a certain way and having the match play out a certain way. So it didn't so much look like cheating, the same way that throwing a fight doesn't really look like they gave up. They just kind of accept the terms of how the fight is going to go. And this, well, one, it landed a lot of people in jail, which to me is both, you know, just in its execution, but also kind of hilarious to think that someone was going to jail for this. But I mean, it technically, in just about everywhere in the world that there is any type of gambling or competitive competition, it is illegal to, you know, to sway through pay or anything like that the outcome of a sporting event. And at this point, StarCraft was a sport. So some people went to jail, a lot of people paid fines, and the StarCraft scene kind of got sullied, for lack of a better word, and people moved on to other things. At this point in time, in the 2010 time frame, competitive shooters were becoming a much bigger deal, and people would have rather watched, you know, competitive team-based shooters than, you know, a game where at this point people had been, for lack of a better word, cheating. And that does suck, because StarCraft was and still is an awesome game. But then later on, you have the release of StarCraft 2, and it kind of got a resurgence. Not as big in the competitive scene, though it has grown again in popularity quite a bit, which is good. I'm actually really happy about the fact that an RTS is still up there in the competitive landscape, even though it is still, for lack of a better word, dwarfed by games like Dota and League that have hundreds and thousands of followers in their communities, and then also tons and tons of pro players that are playing at, you know, incredibly high levels. And I mean, you don't have something like the International because a game is doing okay. You know what I mean? It's just not how it works. So StarCraft 2 took a little bit of time to get traction, but it has gotten traction back, and that's really good. But OG StarCraft, even after the remaster came out, was still its own scene, mostly because there's no real change in the meta there. StarCraft is StarCraft is StarCraft, and will probably always be StarCraft. I have not seen any major changes to StarCraft. In fact, I don't think I've had a patch to StarCraft in some years. I don't think there ever will be. Now, granted, StarCraft Remastered did a lot of things when it came to the visuals, but for the most part, the bread and butter formula of how the game works, as far as, you know, which units do good against other units at this particular terrain height and so on and so forth, all that stuff, that all stays the same. StarCraft 2 still has a lot of changes done to its meta. Units get shifted around the same way they kind of do with a lot of different, with different MOBAs and stuff like that. You change the meta, you do balances and stuff like that to different characters and things. Only difference is in an RTS, in StarCraft 2, you're looking at overall changes to a lot of different units within certain factions and stuff. So it's a bit of a broader range balance patch in a lot of ways. And to be perfectly honest, there hasn't been any major changes in a long time since Wings of Liberty came out for StarCraft 2. It's pretty much stayed pretty solid at this point. Small little tweaks here and there, but nothing game changing. It's not like with Dota where they do a huge balance patch, you know, at the end of each international just to change things up for the sake of changing things up. But again, StarCraft 1 stays StarCraft 1, and it's always going to be that. But I know what you're thinking. Tony, what is the point in this? Why are we talking about this old game? Old game is old. We want to talk about new things. We want to talk about new fighting games that are coming out. We want to talk about Dota and this and that and the other. Well, as I have stated multiple times, many times, probably to nauseam, and I will continue to state on this show, that it's important to understand the foundations of things. It's important to understand where certain things begin. And when it comes to competitive gaming on a large scale, something that is recognized by the world, you look at StarCraft. StarCraft is the only time in my adolescent days I remember hearing about people getting paid to play video games, not in the way like journalists get paid to play games to review them, or, you know, testers or anything like that. That was all, you know, stuff that we people knew about but had no idea of how to get into, you know, way before the days of the internet and almost total transparency. But it was the first time I'd ever heard about somebody playing a game competitively and getting paid a lot of money. I remember as a kid hearing about someone winning a tournament and winning 10 grand. And that blew my mind. Like, mind blown. The fact that someone won $10,000 for being better at StarCraft than a bunch of other people. That's crazy go nuts to me. I mean, it still kind of is. Like, sometimes I think about it and I look at, you know, Twitch or I watch stuff on YouTube and I think to myself, like, man, it's like we live in a time when I can watch a fighting game tournament or watch the International the same way people, like, I can watch the International in the same way that people watch the Super Bowl. And that's pretty freaking cool, man. Like, when you really bring it down to brass tacks, video games have their own Super Bowl now. We have our own, like collegiate championships. We have our own, you know, like conference titles. Like there's a pennant race in League of Legends, for God's sake. That's pretty cool. And I think it's important to look back at what kind of brought that to the limelight, brought that to the mainstream. And StarCraft is right there. It is one of the like fundamental pillars of competitive gaming. And you have a lot of other ones too, especially at the same time. At that point in the 90s, you have things like Quake. You have, at 98, I believe it was Quake 2. But you have Quake, you have Unreal, you know, then which spawns Unreal Tournament, which is like the actual competitive shooter when you're looking at it. Like, that is it. That is run and gun arena shooter 101, man. And it's just crazy to me to think that, like, you go back and it all starts with, you know, we need additional pylons. Come on, man. That's pretty rad. Now, what I will finish this out with is a small announcement and one that I'm hoping I don't give the wrong type of power to by putting it out here in the public sphere, but we'll see. So, as is known, and I don't make any bones about it, but I'm in the Army, have been for a very long time, and I was recently in talks with some people for the Army's esports team, and I'm really working toward getting my own place and getting things set up because I'm trying to try out for various teams. I'm not going to talk about like the specific games or anything like that. I don't want to go on and on about that, but one of the things I do want to bring to light is the fact that the Army is getting with the times and they're understanding that a lot of their potential recruits and potential candidates for, you know, for the Army are people that play games. And I think it's very forward thinking of the Army to be like, we kind of need to get ahead of this before we end up not being able to recruit anybody, because you have to seem appealing from some standpoint. And the fact that they're getting an esports team together brings a lot of appeal. But also, I just want to say that, one, I'm actually really, again, I'm proud of the Army because they've done this. And two, I'm going to go and I'm going to throw my hat in and I'm going to try and be a part of this thing. So while that's not going to affect Binary Gamer by any stretch of the imagination, I just wanted to put that out there because I feel like the people that listen should know, just in case some things do change, maybe like the schedule that the podcast gets put out on and stuff like that. Or maybe you want to go and check out what the Army, the future esports team of the United States Army, has going on, which I know they already have a Twitch channel and things like that. So definitely go and check that stuff out. But I just wanted to put that out there and kind of spread that to the masses. So with that, I believe we're done for the day. We've talked about StarCraft, and that is chapter 2 of this series in the books, my friends. So that is going to do it for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Remember, Binary Gamer is a podcast you can find in all the places that you listen to your podcast, whether it be iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Podcast. Wherever you find your podcast, you can find Binary Gamer. You can also find us over on YouTube, youtube.com. Head over there and search for Binary Gamers and check out the awesome stuff we do over there. And of course, you can find me over on Twitter at iFlipWithASwitch. And like I said, hit me up. We can just talk games or not. It's cool. Do whatever. I'm not your dad. But that's it. Again, thank you very much for listening. Have an awesome week. Go play some games, kids. Class dismissed.
I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed-rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it was pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.